Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Welcome, everybody, to the greatest show on earth. That is, greatest automotive show on earth. And it's Steve, the producer, Johan, who's kicking the show off because Brady has got a sore throat, and Shane called and said, I can't make it, Steve. I got some things I got to take care of at the home. And so I'm driving solo tonight, but I have a great guest in the studio with me tonight. So the second segment will bring him on, and we're going to go off the parking lot a little bit tonight because he is a musician who loves cars. He's written a lot of music. We're going to play some of his music. And I'm a musician, and I love cars as well. So we're going to probably talk a little more about music than we've ever talked before. But in the meantime, typically we start things out with, well, you know how it goes, with what's going on in the world of automotive. And I came across a few things that you might want to know. Breaking news, Tesla and Elon show their true colors by bringing in Goldman Sachs. You know, the guys who were behind the much of the 2008 stock market crash, yet didn't get hurt while millions of Americans lost their home. Well, in order to bail out the company, that's what they're going to do. Amidst mounting questions about CEO Elon Musk's plan to take the automaker private, the car company's board is beginning the necessary steps to evaluate a proposal with the investment firm Silver Lake and Goldman Sachs brought in to offer advice on what appears to be a Saudi-funded buyout. Now, that gets worse. Those developments come just a week after CEO Musk tweeted his interest in taking Tesla private while also hinting that funding is secured. Gosh darn it. I don't like either of those parties, Saudi Arabia and Goldman Sachs. Come on, guys. Really? But anyways, as you know, and you've been listening for months and months and months on the show, it's almost every other week I have to talk about Tesla because they're in hot water about one thing or another. You know, folks, it's one thing to build a vehicle that's quite frankly a really cool vehicle. I mean, that car is phenomenal. I have a very good friend down in Texas who shall remain anonymous who owns one of those nice things, and he loves it. It's very fast, very quiet, very efficient, but they just can't seem to get all the bugs worked out of the the manufacturing process. So in the meantime, they're going after more money. Elon has had to even been told you can't take any more money out of it until you turn a profit. So we'll see. It's just every week, it's just biting our nails, finding out what's going on with Tesla. And then speaking of more of the auto industry, rising inflation is hurting the auto industry. For those who do not know, a rising rate of inflation now poses we'll be talking about posers in the next segment, an additional threat to the auto industry already under pressure from new tariffs and trade restrictions. Of course, you know all about that. From June 2017 to June 2018, the U.S. Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers rose 2.9%, the largest 12-month increase since a period ending in 2012. The Congressional Budget Office, in a report in which it indicated it expects U.S. economic growth to slow next year, also said it's weak as it expects rate inflation to top 3.1% through the second half of 2018. And that means U.S. workers' paychecks are worth less than they were a year ago, the Labor Department reported Friday, as modest gains have not kept pace with inflation. And folks, if you live in the Northwest, the beautiful Northwest, Puget Sound area, which I know many of you do and others don't, you better have a really good paying job because you have to make a minimum of $26 an hour in order to be able to afford to rent an apartment here. And that's not a nice apartment. That's just an apartment. $32 an hour if you wish to rent an apartment in Seattle. So we're not talking $15 Starbucks jobs here or working at the warehouse. So skilled labor, you have to be making good money. Otherwise, you've got to be moving out of this area. Well, there's a lot of other areas that aren't quite as expensive, but the wages are a lot lower too. So consequently, anytime inflation hits, it's going to hit us. Now, on to mid-sized trucks. Three things. After a lengthy absence, the Ford Ranger is set to return to the U.S. market in 2019, and shoppers now can price and even build their own version of the midsize truck at a special microsite the Detroit automaker has launched. It will offer many versions of its 4x2, Super Cab, XL, and 6-foot box, 4x4, etc., up to more lavishly equipped 4x4 Super Crew Laureate with a 5-foot cargo box. And it begins in 2019 at starting price of $24,300. Now, Chevy, on the other hand, as their Colorado, their midsize, starts at about $20,500. And Nissan Frontier starts at $18,900. Now, I can show my wife these statistics and tell her that's why Steve is putting some effort into the 92 Mazda pickup that he has that used to be my father's pickup that his grandson, my oldest son, bought for $1,000 with 64,000 miles on it, great shape, and he drove it for a period of time, and then he bought a new Hyundai so he could do Ubering, and the truck got parked, so I'm taking over the payments. Actually, I'm just buying it back. We purchased it from him this last week, and I just spent 10 hours Friday and Saturday totally, completely cleaning the paint, buffing it, putting on 2 coats of wax and sealer and all that, and I'll be posting that video shortly when I edit it down. Of course, now it's all dirty because we have construction at the bottom of our driveway going on. But nonetheless, I fixed the muffler, I did a couple little things, and I got a few more things like replacing the back bumper and refinishing the front bumper and all that. You know, I figure about $500 to $1,000 investment total. And I'm going to have, quite frankly, a very good running car for a fraction of the cost of a new midsize pickup. And by the way, it's got the double cab back there, so it's a big boy. Now, Lotus may get a new injection of funding for those who are Lotus fans. I knew a couple people that owned them. Geely appears ready to expand its sphere of influence once again. The parent company of Volvo and major shareholder of Daimler AG is rumored to be examining the viability of putting $1.9 billion into the sports car maker Lotus. So I think that's a cool idea. You've got all these supercars out there. They're doing wonderful because regardless of what the economy does for the average Jane and Joe, there are the uber rich, and they like their cars. And they don't have a problem spending hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for brand new ones and spending tens of millions of dollars for special auction cars because they've got the money. They make money going up, they make money going down, while the rest of us, we don't get that benefit. And then on the falsifying emissions front, we have bad news from Japan. Suzuki Motor Company, Mazda Motor Company, Yamaha Motor Company, each told Japan's transport ministry they certified products after they'd failed emissions test. And this follows the Nissan Motor Company and Subaru Corp admitting to doing the same. So Japan's transport ministry ordered 23 Japanese auto and motorbike manufacturers to examine their inspection procedures in July following similar mistakes. made by other companies at final product quality checks. This is kind of like the Polaris situation of, yeah, we got great quality control and yet another 600,000 Polaris RZs and Razors and things like that still get recalled because of fire hazards and stuff. So, although there hasn't been as many of those lately. So, we'll see. We'll see. This is all going to get taken care of. And then finally, a couple weeks ago, I came across this. Jeep maker is going to sue an Indian knockoff version of itself. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles wants the International Trade Commission to block Mahindra LTD from selling its Roxor model through its new U.S. dealerships because, quite frankly, it looks just like a Jeep. So we'll be right back with more of the show and a really cool guest. And we're going to start off the next segment with a piece of his music. So stand with us. We'll be right back with you. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944, a water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit Father.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Welcome back to the second segment, and if you like that music, you'll like our guest. Craig Martin is in the studio with us tonight, and Craig, what was the name of that song?
Red Light.
I'm sorry. Say, what was that again?
Red Light.
Thank you, Red Light. And, you know, I'll tell you what, that takes me back, Red Light Racing. When I was a kid in high school, you're just a couple years older than me, and you know what that's all about. Racing from stoplight to stoplight. Back before people did red light runs.
Right.
When it turned green, you could actually take off.
Well, there was room to do it, too.
There was. Not anymore.
No.
We were down the streets of Bellingham when we did that kind of stuff. Down in the middle of Bellingham, sometimes we'd be side by side and then other side streets where you just, somebody says go and you go, but... Now, where did you grow up, Craig?
You know, I probably should have changed that to brake light. It's got me hypnotized. Right? in the Seattle area.
Okay.
Yeah. Up Queen Anne and Magnolia and Ballard. And
okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool. We got, I think Brady grew up in the area, and then a good friend of our show, Lance Lambert, he grew up in Tacoma, and yet they all cruised up here and everything, and... So Craig Martin is a musician and a car enthusiast, and I invited him to come on the show, and he was happy enough to come in. He actually lives local, so that's been really good. We met over at the Hot Rod and Hogs show goes on Father's Day weekend, and a great show. I mean, it's always a great show, and I meet great people there. And Craig and I started talking, and I found out he plays music, and he writes original tunes. And I thought this would be a great person to have on. And so, Craig, I thought we'd start things off with, well, you already did. You said you grew up in the Seattle area. But when did you fall in love with cars?
Oh, man, from the earliest memories. I can remember being 4 years old pushing a little plastic 64 Corvette around on the floor.
Yep.
In the kitchen floor. And drawing pictures of Rat Fink, you know, during grade school and getting in trouble for it. You know.
Did you do that on your schoolwork?
In place of doing schoolwork, yeah. They made me see it. They made me see a street or a shrink.
Oh, yes.
Because they thought it was crazy drawing all these pictures about hot rods with guys with big eyeballs and shifters coming out of the car and all that. No, I'm just doing what's popular, you know.
You know, I did the same thing. As a matter of fact, my mom had got these. Someone sold her a kit, and it was like they were trains, and it had this ink in a cartridge, it was a tube with a special tip, and you could sit there and you'd draw on the lines. It was draw by line, and I made all these pictures for the wall. Well, then I had left over. So then my mom had some carbon paper, and I had some white T-shirts, and I drew those monster cars.
Oh, yeah.
And
Ed,
I put
Ed
it on.
Ed Roth, right?
Yeah. Looking at Ed Roth, and we used to get the little collector cards in the and so I drew them on paper first, then I used the carbon. I traced that onto the white T-shirt, and then I used this black ink stuff, and I traced it, and I made my own black and white monster car T-shirts. And then when you washed it, all the carbon would go out, but the others are. So, hey, we have something in common. We were both artists drawing those kind of pictures. And
yeah, that might be a little bit of a stretch for me being an artist, but I did my best. Yeah.
Well, you did your best. did you get into the cartoons? Those
I did.
Comic
in fact,
books?
I still have them.
Me too.
Yeah,
I got them in a box.
I have a bunch of old magazine boxes and stuff. I had them in a magazine rack for the longest time down in one of our family rooms, and the wife didn't care for that, so I finally moved those out of there. I got to put them in a garage, I think. But yeah, love cartoons. Kidding. Yeah.
Matter of fact, I don't know if you know it, but they've relaunched that magazine. A publisher picked it up. And Gary Trosley's back. He's doing his, and a number of the other artists that were in there are doing theirs. And what's interesting is I had Gary Trosley on another show that I do about motorcycling a couple years ago, and we were talking about cartoons. Lance and I were talking about on one of that show, and I went and found out where the guy is, and we are going to have the new publisher of cartoons in the weeks to come. He's already emailed me back a couple times, says, hey, I'm under crunch time, but we'll get it together.
Cool.
So I'm looking really forward to it, because I was an artist. I still am, really, at heart. And I love that. And in making models, did you get into models?
That's exactly where I was going next, is making model cars, of course, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite kits, I think, were AMT and MCP. MCP, is that right? I think that's right. Yeah.
Ravel,
well, yeah, and Ravel kind of.
Yeah, but they didn't do as many of the cars, did they?
No, I think they did a little more of the, the Barris type of things and whatnot.
Yeah. And actually,
I love those, too.
I got those. I had a dragster. I had the round dome thing.
They had the Pie Wagon. They had the Boot Hill Express.
Yep.
That was my favorite one, that old 1800s hearse. Yeah. The big engine in it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And then I got into Hot Wheels, so.
Yeah, of course. We used to go down to the Bon Marché on the 8th floor, right? Toytropolis, when Hot Wheels came out. God, dating ourselves there.
Well, now, you did that. I grew up in Ferndale, so we went to Ira Yeager's up in Bellingham, and they had all the Hot Wheels. And we go to Yeager's, buy my Hot Wheels, and then we had a hobby store.
Yeah.
And I would go in and get the Matchbox and Corgi cars.
Mm-hmm.
And those were like a little better, a little different kind of quality. You didn't race them, but the Matchbox Corgi cars, those are really cool. I've got all those. Matter of fact, I was at my 40-year reunion 2 weekends ago, and I'm talking to Tori Lingblom, and we were chatting about, yeah, I remember we were doing, and Kenny, and we're like, yeah, we did Hot Wheels in the basement.
Yeah.
And we went down his
stairs.
Around, and he says, remember when we put the track outside and we came out the two-story window? I go, yeah, I remember that. He goes, you do? I go, yeah, we were doing that.
Yeah.
And fortunately, all my good Hot Wheels I still have in the original box, the case, 48-box case. And I've got, like, the school bus, which is, like, worth, I guess it's about $800 today.
Wow.
And I got all that kind of stuff. I got the magazines. I've got all the comic books.
Do you have old Auto Traders? I mean, I've kept old piston and rudders.
people don't know that it was piston and rudder. And yes,
I kept those for years. I'd get one once a week. I had stacks of these things.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
I think we're kind of outing ourselves as pack rats, right?
Piston Rudder, Auto Trader. Auto Trader was great. That's where I found my El Camino, was when it was an Auto Trader magazine. I bought my El Camino in 91, and it was through the Auto Trader. And I remember, I've still got the ad. I cut the ad out and kept it. And
same here. That song that you played just the beginning of, that's actually a car I bought on Auto Trader. 69 Cornette RT. That's the song was about that car.
Oh, my gosh.
I still have the ad. I actually know where the car is, too, but it's a different story.
Yeah, you told me that you've tried to buy it back.
Yeah.
And the owner is like, I love this. I love this car.
Yeah.
Did they take it to shows?
No. Not that it may be down in their area, but I've not. I've seen it. You know, it's funny. I've offered them. I've had the original license plates and the frames.
Right.
And that's kind of a valuable thing to have.
Yep.
You know, if you're into this, you know, hobby. And I'm having a hard time getting the guy to kind of show. I just want to take pictures with a car that I got back.
Right.
That I had at the same time as that one, which is this 71 Challenger. Had that up at the Maltby show. All I want to do is say, look, you can have these for free. And here's let me take some pictures of my old car and maybe try to talk them into selling them. You know what, though? They go for so much. Restoration costs are so dang much that I don't know that I could afford to buy that and restore it.
Well, I've got my 68 El Camino, and it's sitting in the driveway, and I've got some cash stashed away.
Spend it.
But having Shane working at a fab shop, and then my middle son is working there too, I'm learning what goes into it, and so I will be able to get some weasel deals. But hang on. We got our segment coming up here. We're coming on with our music. So hang on. We'll be right back with more of the show and more of Craig Martin. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
Get ready. It's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmunds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmunds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Hey all you guys and gals, the next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our Older Than the Hill Chateau d'Ishmael Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punkle Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau d'Ishmael, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate, and where we never leave the lights on, because hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau d'Ishmael, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau d'Ishmael. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
Well, welcome back to the third segment of the show, and this week we are once again, I'm driving solo, and that's because Shane and Brady are out, and I've got a great guest in with me, Craig Martin, and we're just talking about, well, kind of reminiscing about our childhood and our passion for cars, and did you grow up near any kind of car dealerships or anything like that where you'd go by and look at some of the cars and go, ooh, those are really cool cars? Or was it more as you just got older in high school, it was like your buddies had really cool cars and you fell in love with a certain kind? I mean, you said you had that Coronet and then you got a Challenger. What drew you to that Coronet? What was it that made you want to buy that?
Well, revisiting yesteryear, right? Because we're kind of tweeners in terms of being able to afford those cars.
Yes.
You know, at that age. But my earliest recollections are I lived in a place out in Black Diamond when it really was out in the sticks. And the only thing to do out there was people were either hot rodding or probably drinking beer, right?
Yep.
And I had a foster brother that had a 64 Impala Supersport, and I thought this guy was God, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And then the next year, he had a 65 GTO, that light yellow color, whatever that is, with the Hurst rims. Oh, jeez, man. Both four-speed cars. And then he had a Vette after that, and then my cousin had a 67 L78 Chevelle Malibu, and big gears and, you know, four speed. So, I mean, when you're around that, you're kind of breathing it, you're riding in these things, it's pretty visceral. And then, so it stays with you.
Yep.
And then, you know, I suppose we went by dealerships and whatnot, but I didn't really have the kind of the mom and dad childhood thing where we were hanging out and doing those kind of things. But I certainly remember those old cars. And then years later, as these cars, they were affordable for a while. People forget this, especially after the big oil
embargo.
Oh,
yes. Right? Oh, yeah.
And in high school, I mean, everybody had a used something, you know,
yep.
Roadrunner or Chargers and Chevelles.
Yep.
Because they were affordable. Even a high school kid that had a part-time job could buy one. I mean, they were giving these things away. A
couple of my best friends had muscle cars, 69, 68, 67s, and they could afford them, 77, 78. They could,
yeah.
76, 77, 78
yeah.
back in that time.
Yeah.
I grew up in a small town like you, with Black Diamond, a small town, Ferndale being a small town, and my neighbors had, couple houses up. They were a number of years older, and they were always working on. They had Nomads. They had 4x4 50s trucks. They had Corvette. They had Chevelles, and on and on and on. And then so it was funny because the Chevelle would go from one owner to the next owner, to the next owner. And it would kind of get sold and bought by different people within
the town,
in the same area.
I bought a car like that a couple of years ago. It's funny, yeah.
And so they would blow an engine and put a different engine in, or they'd restore it, and then the next guy would get it. And it was like literally the same two or three, four Chevelle, 65, 66, 67 Chevelles would be rotating different people. And matter of fact, I saw a couple of them much, much, much later. I think it was even after high school, I visited and went, I ran into somebody and they were showing me. I'm like, oh, that was so-and-so's car. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was. Yes, it was. It was like they had gotten it and they were putting it back to more of an original format. I doubt it was the original engine, but nonetheless, small towns, you do that. You just either drink and beer.
It's a culture, right?
It's a culture.
It's a car culture. And people forget this country was, at one point, it was all about freedom.
It was freedom.
It's freedom. And so I'm kind of shocked, to be honest with you, you know, and I get it. I guess everybody's kind of moving into the cities and that type of deal. But, man, just that ability to go drive down those two-lane highways, you know, with your friends and go racing or just hanging out.
Right.
And man, it seems like that whole era is just about gone. It may still happen in the flyover country, as they call it, right?
Well,
on the left coast, it sure ain't happening.
No. I remember mid-'80s, they enacted the no cruise.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally, in the mid-'80s.
I got stopped in Alki in that
time. I did, too. Yeah. I was on a motorcycle, and I got stopped. We were coming through from the south and coming through, and I had my helmet up, and whoop, 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 whoop. No eye protection. I'm like, what the heck? And then I realized they don't want me down here. They think I'm just part of the cruising crew.
Yeah. And what's funny is when I got stopped by these guys, it was Alki. I was in a 70 Cornet RT, which is my first. That's not my first foray into muscle cars. It was my second one. Anyway, I had my whole family in the car, you know, kids and this and that. It's like with car carriers. And do we really look like the cruising type here, guys? And they made me go up over the hill and come back. And I was going to visit a friend who ironically lived two blocks off of Alki, and that's all we were really up to. But anyway, those ordinances kind of took the fun out of it.
They really did.
Now, did you get down to Golden Gardens? Because we used to hang out down there.
That I moved down here in 80, and I started my new job, and I kind of got totally out of the car culture. And I moved on. Life was life, and I didn't think of it anymore. And it wasn't until 90 that I had that itch to get. It was a chance. I had some money. My vehicle was not running too well. Or we needed a second car. My wife had a Fiat, an old Fiat, and it was falling apart. And I says, I'll tell you what. You use the Honda. Runs great. I'll get an El Camino.
Yeah.
I'll get that muscle car that I was dreaming about. I came that close to buying a 68 Roadrunner with a 383 four-speed, but it didn't shift correctly, and I just didn't feel good about it when I went out and test-rided it. So I also felt very guilty about kind of bashing up my folks' car, so I bought my parents' 1800 Mazda four-door. But nonetheless, that's my best friend, Bert. He had a Chevelle SS69. And his dad had a 69 El Camino, so we would drive either one of them. And so when I went out looking, I wanted a Chevelle and or an El Camino, and I thought 68, that was the first new model year. And so I went that route because a whole lot less were manufactured in the SS trim of the El Camino. It was the first year the El Camino went SS. So that's why I went that route. But it directly replaced back to my childhood and my friend Bert. And the time that we spent, the hundreds of hours we spent in his car.
Yeah.
And even as a kid going down and looking, in 68, I remember looking at the dealership and seeing that 68 or 69 probably, and even my dad saying, boy, that's a beautiful car, that 69 Chevelle sitting there, the yellow with the black stripes and stuff. So visceral related back. And then I think that's why, to be honest, when we go to car shows and everybody's got their car and they got the car and they buy, the guys that are in their 60s and 70s spending oodles of money for the car that they had in their high school or they dreamed of having. And it's amazing how much people pay to go back in time.
That's what it's about.
Yeah. And relive those days.
Yeah, it's not about the horsepower. We were talking earlier about the cars being made today. I mean, most minivans could outrun, you know, half the muscle cars made back in the day, let's be honest. You know, technology and all that. But they can't replace the era. That era was special. You know, the country was still, you know, was very positive vibe and whatnot before the, you know.
The Vietnam War and all that. It was there.
It was there, I guess. But it just seemed, maybe it's never been real innocent, but it just seemed like a time where you wanted to have a little fun, get in your car, cruise and do this and that. And that whole era, you know, it comes back to you when you're hanging out with all your buddies. I think I was at the Magnolia Car Show, and I came across a bunch of classmates. It was shocking this past weekend. I hadn't seen these guys in years. And it's like you slip back into that mode. You're hanging out, leaning up against the car.
Yes.
And everybody's and we weren't even really talking about the cars that much.
No.
But it was a heck of a nice backdrop, you know what I mean?
That's that.
A lot of fun.
When at the 40th reunion, it was like some of us did some recollections. We got the microphone, and the stories we told were when we were in middle school and younger.
Yeah.
They weren't necessarily about, a couple of them we talked about high school, but mostly we survived high school. It was prior to high school that we really had the fun time and we just lived like Huckleberry Finn and wild times. And the girls I'd talk to, they'd be saying, we would bike 20 miles one way and on our bicycles. And I thought, geez, I thought the guys were the only one did. No, the girls did the same thing.
Of course.
And then it takes you into that. And it's like when it comes to music, much like cars, when I hear a song, the song takes me back to that time and era when this was taking place or this was taking place. So we had our reunion at a berry farm, Boxberry Farm up there in Ferndale. I picked berries there as a kid. a young kid.
I picked berries for Sunny Jim Jam, yes.
Yes. And the songs in the early 70s, because this is the time when I was born in 59, so early 70s, 11, 12, 13, I was out picking berries. And the songs that come on, like Sweet City Woman by the Stampeders, and Uncle Albert by Paul McCartney, yeah. And all that era, the big hit that was on Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one by Redbone. That song, come on. Anyway, all those songs, when I hear it, it takes me back to the berry fields. Innocent yeah. times. Right. I was happy to make a dollar a day making a flat.
Yeah.
But that dollar could buy a lot
no kidding.
Of goodies.
You know, I haven't seen that movie yet, Guardian. Everybody talks. I got to see. It's a soundtrack, I guess. It's really good.
Go on to YouTube and just listen to the soundtrack, yeah. And it'll take you right back to your youth.
But by the way, talking about car dealerships and this and that, I remember through the 80s and whatnot as I settled down with a family and that type of deal. We lived up in Magnolia, and our my in-laws were down Lake City. I always cruised up 99 because there used to be some different classic car places.
Yes.
And Bill's Wheelhouse was like one of my favorites.
Oh, yes.
He always had some way-killing stuff. And I can actually still remember getting out of my car and looking these things over. The family's in the car waiting for me. I mean, I remember looking at a 70 W31 Olds that was just mint, a 69 Hurst Olds. And just countless cool cars. Yeah, Draggers and all those different places.
Yep.
Yeah.
Compact Car Corner was the one in the North End.
Right, right.
But yeah, Bill's Wheelhouse, that was a big one there. And that's the kind of thing. And then so when you think about cars and you think about the tunes that you were playing when you were in the cars. So as a matter of fact, we were playing, some Nazareth and all that kind of stuff at my reunion because I related a funny story. Because Nazareth, Hair of the Dog, I had that 8-track, and my buddy had Fool for the City, Fog Hat with Slow Ride. Yeah. And we played those thing until we wore those tapes out
and
all that stuff. And
see, that shows how young you are. You wore out tapes.
Yes. And I moved a cassette deck, and I wore those things out. Squeak, 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 squeak. But you got into music, and we both had a love of music. When did you start playing music and getting into that?
When I was probably about 10 years old, my brother and I used to play in tennis rackets, boxes, and pots and pans. And I was the drummer on the boxes and pots and pans, and he'd play a tennis racket. But, that's when we were just turning to eight, the Beatles were still relevant, late 60s and that type of deal, and the flower generation. I think I took it up the guitar when I was about 12. My mom got me a guitar out of like a pawn shop, like a classical nylon string thing.
Right.
That I promptly sat on by accident after a few months, and it was a cheap guitar and broke
right.
up. But fortunately, I had a friend, my best friend, Mike Stowe. Yeah. His dad had this killing acoustic guitar. It was a Guild, I believe. And I'd go up there, and he'd just let me, strum on that thing all the time. And so from that point on, strumming guitars, and then went to the service. And after the service, even in high school, I had a buddy that we played acoustic guitars. We ended up doing some gigs at, frat houses at the U.
Wow.
Very strange. Yeah. Ended up smoking pot with my science teacher's wife.
Science teacher in high school?
We got good grades after that, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, there's a little known fact for we had the same thing in our high school because I was relating some very unpleasant things that sexual related things of teachers and students that were on the
QT. How come I didn't get in on that? What?
Well, no. That's pretty perverse. But anyway, then there was so-and-so used to smoke doobies out in the parking lot with everybody. I'm like, oh, that's right. Oh, yeah, that was a wild 70s that people were just freaking nuts, man.
Gosh.
It was nuts.
It was out of control.
It was out of control. Yeah, it really, people had no clue. And little towns were not immune. As a matter of fact, I think they might have been worse because they're...
Yeah, what else did you have to do?
That's right. it's just amazing. But the music, and we're coming up to our break here, and I don't want to... I want to move into that, segue into your music and that type of thing. So we'll be right back with more of Craig Martin and the show. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944. A water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. RavenstoneVaporHoning.com, redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Get ready, it's coming. The 18th Annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmonds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmonds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmonds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on!
This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment.
This is Elton Roundhill and Shane Osborne with E-Company Customs in Linwood, Washington. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Robert with Bonbrenner Motorsport. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
No, this is not Funkadelic. This is not Parliament. This is our guest, Craig Martin. One of his little songs called, I think it has something to do Burning Rice. What's the song?
Wake Up and Smell the Rice.
That's right. Wake Up and Smell the Rice. A little commentary on metrics against the big blocks.
Yeah, it's just making fun of the imports, but it is. In a fun way. And the person doing the rapping on that passed away recently in the last couple
I'm
weeks.
Sorry about that.
Too bad. It, you know, kind of too young. But he played drums on a fair amount of my stuff, so that was his attempt at rapping. But we never really intended that to sound like real rap.
No.
It was supposed to be kind of funny.
I love it. It's kind of funny because when you listen to that, it was like, oh yeah, you know I didn't get really into much of the funk when in the 70s because it didn't play much up in our neck of the woods. And it wasn't until much later that, I mean, there was certain songs, definitely, Sly and the Family Stone and things like that, but it wasn't until much later, probably 10 years ago in my life, that I discovered, you know, Parliament and Funkadelic and
Cool
I
and
just,
Gang.
I got, to, well, Cool and the Gang was already out there, you know, and all that, but the real deep, heavy stuff where it really... You're like, wow, and I just get mesmerized. And thanks to YouTube, I can listen to album after album of that. But I'm like, yeah, the Isley Brothers, they had some wonderful song. Who's that lady?
Yeah.
You know, and that guitar solo in that song is one of the greatest guitar solos of all time. I mean, my hair on my neck just always goes up.
Is that Jimmy on that song?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Jimmy Isley, yeah, just amazing. Just totally amazing. So you picked up the guitar, you did it. When did you shift into electric and start playing with bands and stuff? Was it in high school or after high school? Well, it was after you got out of the service.
Right. Yeah, after I got out of service, I got back. I bought another acoustic. I still have this one. It's nice. It's a 72 triple-aught 18, a Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it from this hippie gal I met while I was in the service living off base, and she was into astrology and all this. And I got this cool little guitar for like $400-something. I think it's the same model that Steve Howe uses.
Oh, wow.
In the intro for Roundabout. No, the one with the acoustic where he hits the... Yeah, right. Yeah, you do. There you go.
Matter of fact, I was learning that song with my Scott Linnemuth, my guitar teacher.
Oh, there you go.
Do you know who Scott is?
Yeah.
That's who I took my guitar lessons in the early 80s, I decided I wanted to play guitar, so I took lessons from him.
He's a killing guitar player. He's been around for a long time.
Oh, he has. Yeah. And he taught me, and then I think it was 85, I went to a songwriting thing, and I met somebody, and I was really into this, and he and I collaborated, and we put together a song, and I couldn't play guitar well enough, so I brought in a friend who did play guitar and sang. And they said, well, there's a big PV bass over there, Steve. Pick that up. So I picked up the PV bass and started playing that. And I kind of played mostly on the E string to begin with. So I got the title E-Man.
See, so that's where they always relegate us, you know, our non-shredding guitar players to the bass, right?
Well, it is. And it was shortly after we said, we entered in a contest. We won. It's like 85. And we said, hey, there's something here. Let's put together a group. So I went out and got myself a mid-size bass and just started learning how to play and got better and better and better. But I had the guitar underpinning. So even now, even though I don't play much, I have a acoustic. I play around with it. But I know phrasings, and I also know the various, as you would know, the different chord progressions. So you're not just in a blues. You can go chromatic and monochromatic and all that stuff. But back to yourself, when did you get into actually playing with people and starting to write music and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I can actually remember the very first song that I wrote, which was, I'm not going to date myself. I do remember the first song I wrote, and I think right after the Army, I said, I need an electric guitar. And of course, I was always a big Santana fan.
Oh, yeah.
So I went down to they weren't called guitars, et cetera. It was Seattle Music. I forget what it was. Actually, it was right by the bus station downtown before they moved down the street there on 8th. But so it was like the wheeling and dealing days. And, you know, you'd go in those places like used car shops.
Oh, yes.
But I knew what guitar I wanted. I'd seen a picture of it. It was this double octave LS6 Gibson with like a six-setting switch on it, which was kind of useless, and a really thin neck. And actually, if you're a tapper, this would be a great guitar for tapping on.
Right.
And solid. Anyway, I had to have that, and I said, okay, I got to do a band. I got to start a band. And, you know, you hook up with a couple of friends, and next thing you know, he's got a friend who's a drummer, and all of a sudden you're in somebody's garage, and you're starting to do it. But in those days, it's kind of funny. I did, you know, begin writing my own stuff, but we were doing strictly cover things because we were trying to get into taverns and play
right.
And make a little money.
Did you and you were talking to me off air about when you you guys played at the Linwood Tavern? Did you?
Oh yeah, yes.
Played, did you ever play at the Detour, which was up there?
Yes,
the little hole in the wall. That's where I played.
Yeah,
I
as Renton.
Yeah, we were there, but there was another one that was here in Linwood that was over by the Chuck E. Cheese's.
Oh, that's that became the yes, I did, and that became. The Riviera, and Buca de Pepo after that, right?
No, not that one. I'm thinking about do you know where?
I must not have played that one.
Okay, it's up by, there's a Chuck E. Cheese's up here in Linwood, and there used to be a Long's Drugs and everything, and at the very end, there was a little hole-in-the-wall tavern, and that's where we got to open up. Remember a group called The Want in the mid-'80s?
Perhaps.
Okay. Well, anyways, they were good friends with my vocalist guitarist. And so Thea would set up things, and when The Want would play out, we would open up. So we were doing originals, so we had 45-minute set. Yeah. They loved it because we got to open up, and people liked it, and we got to do our own thing. And we did that a number of places, and probably the biggest turnout was we said, hey, let's have some parties. So we did a Boeing party where there was a few hundred people. We rented a hall and just had our own parties. That was the best way. You just say, yeah, party, and people show up by the hundreds, and all of a sudden it's packed. You have three bands up there, and everybody splits whatever comes through the door.
Right.
And
we did. I remember doing using the Musicians Union Hall down Seattle.
Oh, yes.
It's a pretty big room with a nice stage.
Yep.
And it was a New Year's Eve party, and unfortunately, any money we made, and we did make a bunch of money because we brought in a bunch of kegs, and at $2 a cup, people were more than happy
That's
to show
right.
up.
That's right.
And then we ended up kind of destroying the place. So
oh,
story.
Well, we didn't.
We didn't get to use that room again.
No, we didn't do that. We were very careful about it. But
well, we didn't do it. It was our...
Well, the people who came.
Yeah, well, alcohol sometimes in rock and roll, this may be... come as a surprise or a shock to you, but sometimes it can have adverse effects.
Yes. I was pretty level-headed when I was doing my music, but we did play with bands that were fairly obnoxious sometimes, and the fights that would go on between the drummer, I'm walking off the set in the middle because someone adjusted my drum kit not the way, you know, and on and on and on in the drama.
Oh, yeah, there's always an artistic differences.
Yes, there is.
My brother was my drummer, Randy, and he was, him and I would kind of go at it.
Oh, yes. Well, and that's the thing with music is there's always that love-hate, that tension, because egos big as the universe working together. We'll be right back with the rest of our show, so hang on. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored four-on-the-floor red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. The law offices of Ambulance and Chaser are making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, the law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit the Shelter Pet Project.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
So that was another song by Craig Martin. And Craig, by the way, where can people go to find your songs and even purchase them?
Well, I have a few albums on CD Baby, and that song there is off an album titled Driving to the Edge, which Mopar or No Car is on there, and El Camino Man, don't forget
Oh,
that
that's
stage,
right.
Yeah. And a bunch of other fun ones. And then I have some other stuff on there that's not really car-related called Politics, Religion, and Friends. Some people may find it a little, you know, unconventional. And then I just released in the last year plus another follow-up car album with about half or more of the songs that are about cars, and it's called, shockingly, Mopar or No Car, and has a picture of a 70 Cornet RT on there that I owned a couple
yes.
years ago,
yep.
And then has some re-releases or part twos or whatever. What's the
right.
music, what's the musical term for that?
Well, with their
codas, no.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Anyway, and so there's another Mopar No Car, and then there's a new Buick Grand National tune because I'm a big Turbo Buick guy, and I've had one for years, had a couple of those.
Right.
So yeah, CD Baby and iTunes and all the streaming services.
You make more money if people buy it from iTunes, do you not?
That, yes. And,
so please.
And CD Baby.
So guys and gals, go to CD Baby and iTunes because you'll actually make some money on the sale.
Yes.
And you'll pay for it the other places, but he doesn't make much money on it. So go to iTunes, look up Craig Martin.
Slant 6. Yep.
And same thing with CD Baby. Craig, it's been wonderful having you in here. And I just was thinking that we were talking off air about protest songs and that type of thing. But if you think about some of the harshest times as a country was in the Vietnam era, and yet that was some of the most beautiful cars came out during, I believe, some people will go back in the 50s and they love that. But our muscle car era really started the mid-60s all the way to the early 70s. And that was kind of like the zenith of crafting that beautiful, beautiful pony car, that beautiful, even the larger cars, and there was something special about them. Now, that may be dating me. I got a lot of friends who prefer 50s because they're much older than me, but today you've got the Mustang, you've got the Challenger, and you've got the
Camaro,
and you know what? Yeah. They're shadows. They're much higher performing, much better handling, and if I had the money, I'd probably buy one of them, but the fact is, it's a shadow, and the reason why it's a shadow is because they're trying to go back and capture the magic of that era.
And probably more in the backs of some of us old-timers, although surprisingly...
Younger people love those, too.
They do now, and the Mustang, I think, they sell more of those in China.
Yes.
China, what is happening? Maybe China's going to go through a renaissance, but yeah, to your point, I think the 50s cars were higher quality and a little more... voluptuous,
yes.
Maybe kind of like the women
voluptuous,
were, you know
yes.
I mean? But there was this era where they needed to make this available to youth.
Yes.
And that's what the muscle car era is
the
about.
The pony car, the Mustang started out.
Yeah, and that's why it's so special, right? Because even a guy with, you know, working part-time in high school could afford a used one at the very least. And, you know, a couple years old or something.
Well, that's exactly right. And folks, this has been great having you in here with us, Craig. Thanks again for being here. And folks, remember to put the pedal to the metal and keep your eyes on the road. And catch us next week as we have another hour of the best in autotainment for you lined up. And hopefully, Brady and Shane will be back. But have a great time, and we will see you next week.